Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into today's episode of the Agency Toolkit. I'm your host, Julia McLaughlin. I'm here today with my guest, Marcel Petitpas of Parakeeto, and today we are discussing how to estimate projects more accurately in half the time. Marcel is the CEO and founder of Parakeeto, which helps agencies and consultancies create accurate, data-driven estimates for their projects in seconds using their historical harvest data. They use information about past projects to show you exactly how much time it's likely to take you to complete your next project, broken down by role. And then as you make changes and tweaks to hours, budgets, and services, you'll get real-time feedback on how your estimate compares to past projects and what the expected profitability will be. Thanks so much for joining us today, Marcel.
Thank you for having me, Julia. It's great to be here.
Great. So let's dive into a couple questions so that we can get to know you a little bit. So tell us, where are you tuning in from today?
I'm in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, which is a little island off the coast of Canada all the way on the East Coast.
I love it. Fellow Canadian. I am in just outside of Toronto in Ontario. So I love that.
Amazing. You're where everybody thinks the East Coast is.
Yes, I know. I get that all the time. And then, so what really inspires you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
Oh, geez, what a question. To be honest with you, I don't really know. I just get up and I try to get better every day. And I think that I don't have kids yet, but I'm planning, we're in the stages of planning that out. And I feel okay. Like that's going to change my whole world. But I have this feeling that there's no greater purpose for me than, investing everything that I have ever done into a human being. I'm looking forward to that experience.
Yes. It's such an amazing experience. I'm so excited for you. So tell us, why did you get into the business of serving digital marketing agencies? Give us some of your background there.
Yeah. So the first business I ever ran was an agency, and I became intimately aware of how hard it is as an agency owner to answer simple questions mm-hmm. that are kind of plaguing you every day. Like, are we making money on these projects and clients? Do mm-hmm. we have the capacity to take on more work? If so, when? Who do we need to hire? What kind of skills do they need to have? Are we scoping things right? Right. These are like day-to-day questions, but they're really complex to answer when you run an agency, especially if you're, tracking time in one place, tracking projects in another, doing your finances in another place. You got to bring all that data together. The data is messy. It takes a lot of manual work, and therefore you don't really end up doing it. And it's critical to do it because I walked away from my first agency because the margins weren't good enough for me to scale it. I mm-hmm. was, thankfully savvy enough to, on day zero, start to do the modeling. I'm like, okay, how much time is it taking me? How much would it cost to hire somebody else to do this? How much can I charge our clients to do this stuff? And realize like, there's just not enough room here for this to be a real business. And so I walked away before it turned into a set of golden handcuffs. But most people don't do that diligence and then end up in the golden handcuffs and go, oh shit, how do I get out of here?
Yeah.
So that's where I became aware of the problem. And then of course, I, like most entrepreneurs, I tried and failed at a bunch of different things. And then a mutual friend of ours, Dan Martell, reached out one day and said, hey, I got a guy who runs an agency. He's got this idea. I need to connect the two of you. And Jared, who's an investor and partner in the business, said, hey, I'm spending way too much time in spreadsheets trying to answer these questions. I can't find a good solution. There's got to be a better way to do this. And Parakeeto was born on that day.
Amazing. So tell us more about Parakeeto.
Yeah, we exist exclusively to help agencies improve their profitability. And we would describe ourselves as a technology leveraged service and consultancy. So what we essentially do is help agencies design a system where all of their tools flow into what we create as a normalization layer so that they can get reports that are timely and accurate on all their most important questions. Things like, are we scoping this right? Great tooling that's data driven for estimation, tracking project profitability, tracking utilization, forecasting and modeling what they can do in the future. Mm-hmm. And we set up and maintain the entire system that allows them to do that without having to switch to an all-in-one tool, waste time in spreadsheets, constantly be cleaning up their data, or be militant about the way that, they set up their time tracking tool or their project management tool. we allow you to use the tools that you love in the way that your team needs to use them and still get the scalable operations reports out the other end.
That's incredible. I love that. So let's delve into our topic. So today we're going to be talking about how to estimate projects more accurately in half the time. So tell us, so why is estimation important for agencies?
Yeah, this is such a good question. And I want to start by saying that estimation and pricing are not the same thing. And when we start talking about this, I think the mental model is that these are conflated as being one exercise. And often we do consultations with agencies and find that they have one document internally that's being used to scope the project and to get in front of the client, right? That one document is playing those two roles. And the reality is when we estimate a project, scoping or estimating, as I describe it, is figuring out what it's going to cost us to do what the client needs us to do. That is a purely internal exercise. Pricing is the exercise of figuring out how much is the client willing to pay us for that. Mm-hmm. They're related in that we should at some point cross-reference those things and figure out if there's enough room between those two numbers to take on the work, but they shouldn't be tied to one another unless our model is billing on time and materials or something like that. Yeah. So that's the first distinction I want to make is this is not necessarily a question of pricing yet. We'll talk about pricing after. The first thing that we need to figure out as an agency is what is the amount of time, over what time horizon will we need to, you know, deploy those hours, and what skill sets are going to be required to do the thing that we promised to the client. And that's important to know, A, because we need to know that in order to price things well. And we also need to know that in order to do all the things that make the business run smoothly. Resource plan, make sure we have the right people, make sure we hire at the right time, make sure we're not overworking people or underworking people, right? Those are the most complex questions that need to get answered, especially as your agency starts to scale and you start to feel this a lot more as you cross over that 15, 16 employees mark. It really starts to become more and more important. And I think a lot of agencies get away with not doing this well because they price high enough that they can kind of on, you know, the P&L get away with not really figuring that out. But once they start scaling to a certain point, it starts to really hurt them, because when you think about it, any operation system that's trying to answer future looking questions in an agency is based on those assumptions. So until you get those assumptions right, you've got a quicksand foundation to try and build your operations on top of, and it's really going to start limiting your scale. So that's why it's super important. It helps you de-risk, scale, see into the future, make way better decisions if you can get the system for making accurate estimations right.
That's so interesting. So what mistakes do you see that most agencies are making when it comes to estimation and scoping?
Yeah, the first is that they believe that in order to estimate things accurately, they have to spend more time on it, that accuracy correlates linearly with effort and time. So that this is the pushback that I get a lot is like, yeah, we could estimate this better, but you know what, we don't want to spend, you know, 18 hours of executive time in a boardroom crunching numbers in a spreadsheet to make it 10% more accurate if there's a 60% chance we're not even going to win the proposal, right? Mm-hmm. Why would we waste all that time and money?
Yeah.
And the reality is that there is actually a way to make this process way more data-driven so that A, the most senior people in the organization don't end up being the only ones who can do it, because there's so much gut feel, so much subjectivity involved. They're also the most expensive people in the organization too. So there's a real cost benefit to this as well, and allows you to get more accurate in way less time. And here's the kicker, the system actually gets better every time you do a project, because we're creating a feedback loop between what you estimated and what actually happened, and circling that back and using that to inform the way that we change our processes for both estimation and delivery, so that over time, everything gets tighter, everything gets more accurate. And the pushback that I get when I talk about this concept is, well, we couldn't possibly do that because all of our projects are the same. And the question that I would ask you to think about is the output the same, or is the process, is the output different, or is the process different? There's a really good chance the process is very similar and it's just the creative output that's different. And I think separating those two ideas is what starts to unlock, okay, well, since we know that there's a pattern to how we do things, now we can start to think about being more deliberate about how we structure estimates, structure our time tracking data downstream, and create that relationship between what we thought was going to happen and what actually happened, so we can build this model and use it going forward.
Okay, that's awesome. And then, so what are the keys to an accurate and scalable project scoping process?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I think the first thing is being really clear about defining what it is that you're selling to the client, right? When you describe a deliverable, is there a shared understanding between yourself, the client, and your team about what it is that you told the client you were going to do, right? Yes. And we've gone into agencies in our consulting practice and discovered that when the business development team sells a logo and then the team goes and does the logo, there has never in history been a conversation between sales and the delivery team about what does it mean to do a logo. So one person on the design team thinks we have to do stakeholder interviews and market research, and we have to do this long brand narrative and design a logo and design a 50-page brand guidelines document, whereas another person on the design team might just think, okay, it's just a logo. So the scope has never been really clearly defined. And then is there a scale of complexity, right? Is there a small, medium, and large version of this thing? And if we were going to determine where a client lands on that complexity scale, what questions will we ask them? So it starts with really clearly defining what is it, and then defining how do we determine the complexity of it. And if we can understand how to quantify those two things, then we can start to build these graphs that show us the relationship between as complexity goes up, this is how hours go up. And if we design our data schema well, we can start to break that down for how many design hours, how many project management hours, how many strategy hours. We can start to build models and relationships for all of those things so that ideally when we get out the other end of this process, the salesperson asks, hey, you want a logo? That's great. Here's the three questions we need to ask. We get the answers. We understand the complexity. Okay, we know that this is going to take around this many hours of design, this many hours of PM, this many hours of whatever. We apply a little contingency to that. We now have a 90% accurate estimate, and it took us 10 minutes to figure out instead of several hours crunching numbers in a spreadsheet, getting feedback from a bunch of different stakeholders in the business, making a bunch of assumptions, et cetera. So that's kind of the way to think about it is how do we structure our data so it actually helps us answer that question much faster.
Okay. So you help agencies kind of get on the same page, make sure that everyone is crystal clear about what is involved in every single task, every single service offering. So what if the projects have a lot of variation and risk in them and they're hard to scope?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So this is where we start to get into the pricing side of things, right? So are you set up to absorb risk in the way that you price with clients? And we have, and I can share, you know, a link to it perhaps in the show notes, but we have a video on how we think about this. We call it the pricing quadrant, but there's two things that you need to figure out when you're thinking about how should we price our work to the client and how should we set up our operations system. One consideration is value. The other consideration is risk. And I think this risk gets lost and doesn't get considered enough. But when you're negotiating with a client on the scope of a project, on the price of a project, there's a negotiation about risk that you might not even know that you're in the middle of, but it's happening, right?
Yeah.
Because when I tell the client, I'm going to do a flat fee for this, I'm saying I'm taking all the risk on the scope of this work. I'm trusting that you've given me really clear outlines of what you need. I'm trusting that we have a really good process for doing this. I'm going to take on that risk. When you say I need to charge you by the hour, you're asking the client to take on the risk of the scope. And that's a spectrum, right? There's lots of different options in between. But what's happening when you play with contract terms is you're using those to shift risk. Who's taking on that risk? And that is a legitimate negotiation tactic when you're having a scoping conversation with a client. So the way I think about this is, imagine you have a quadrant. The vertical axis is value, right? So low value services versus high value services. So the way I would think about this is low value would be something that is very generalized or very commoditized or is relatively invaluable to the client. So if you're selling general graphic design services, not specialized in a niche, not specialized in solving a problem, that's probably pretty low value. And if you're selling to small businesses that do $100,000 a year in revenue, doesn't matter what you're selling them, the value relative to the size of their business is just not that high. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're selling a logo to an airline that has a $50 million print budget to put it on a fleet of airplanes, that logo might be worth $1 million, even if it's not that much different than the logo you would do for the pizza shop down the street. So think about those two factors when you're factoring value. Then it's risk. And risk is basically how good of a job can we do of scoping this, right? If we're building a website on the same template that we've used 1,000 times for lawyers and we've done 1,000 websites for lawyers, we probably can scope that to within 10% of the hours it's going to take. That's low risk. If we're building a custom software tool on a technology stack that is new, that's not well supported, and we're trying to do something that's never been done before, that's super high risk. It's basically impossible to figure out how much time that's going to take. So that's the risk spectrum. How well can we scope this? If you have a service that is low value, high risk, so bottom left-hand corner of this quadrant, you're probably going to be charging by the hour. And your job there is just to make sure that what you pay people and what you charge the client ends up being, you know, enough to give you about a 50 to 70% gross margin. And you try to bill for as many hours as possible and not eat too many hours because you messed up. Mm-hmm. If you're doing high risk, high value, that's when you get into what I call abstracted time and materials. And you see agencies like Media Monks, for example, doing this, where they're not selling you by the hour. The model is hourly, but you're selling essentially a cross-functional team and you're selling it in an abstracted way. It's going to be this much per sprint, this much per month to essentially lease this team. And then you estimate the project based on number of sprints, number of months, and you give them a range. So you're absorbing, you're trading a lot of the risk and you're sharing it with the client, but it still allows you on the back end to estimate and resource plan effectively, because you know, okay, we have 40 hours a week for this developer on this project for the next 15 weeks. We mm-hmm. have half of this person's time on this project for the next 18 weeks. So that really streamlines the back end and allows you to share risk, but leverage the fact that there's value by having a conversation that's not hourly based and is more of a high level conversation. Then we get into low risk, low value. That's flat fees, right? What sounds better to you, Julia? I'm going to do this website and it's going to cost you $500 an hour, or I'm going to build your website for $5,000. Those might be the same thing objectively on the back end, but one of them is way sexier to the client because it's de-risked, it's clear, they know exactly what they're going to pay. And you're saying, I'm going to take on the risk because we're good at scoping this. And yeah. then high value, low risk, that's when we get into value-based pricing. We're going to work on the conversion rate on your e-commerce website. You're doing $1 million a month. We think we can increase that by 10%. You know, that means you're going to make an extra $1.2 million this year. We're going to charge you 10% of that. It's $120,000 for the CRO project. Mm-hmm. Would that make sense to you? Would you be willing to invest 10% of the upside to get that result? So those are kind of the four ways of thinking about pricing. I know it's a long answer, but it's a great question.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. And so how would you factor in, you know, if maybe the client's a little bit difficult, you know, like you didn't factor that in to start. And then, you know, as the project is, you know, you're working through it, you're realizing that they're just taking up a little bit more time than you'd like. Is there any way that you can kind of be factoring that in as you go, or you're just kind of locked into that agreement that you originally presented yeah. your client?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. It comes down to what your pricing model is, right? So if you've gone to this abstracted time and materials model, then you're in a place where you can have a cadence by which you're checking with the client and saying, hey, these things have come up that we didn't understand or that weren't disclosed at the beginning of the engagement. Mm-hmm. And we think that's going to add a couple weeks to the timeline, right? So that's a really easy way to start adjusting the scope.
Yeah.
And be able to share the risk. If you quote them on a flat fee, this is the mistake I see so many people make. If you quote them on a flat fee, you need to give yourself enough upside. You need to give yourself a reward for taking on risk. And what I see so many agencies do is they go, okay, we need to charge a flat fee for this website. So then they estimate it like it's time and materials, right? How many hours is it going to take us? What's the rate card for each of these people?
Yeah.
And then they pick the most optimistic estimate and then they set the flat fee at that. Whereas really what you should be doing is picking the most pessimistic option and pricing it at that rate so that yeah. you have room, because you're absorbing risk. You need to give yourself some room for that risk. And then if you happen to do it efficiently, you should be rewarding yourself for taking on that risk by having a high profit margin.
Yeah. Right?
But yeah. that's the mistake I see a lot of people make on that. And,
so true.
And then it becomes a question of account management, right? Was the scope actually different, or was it something that you missed? If you didn't do a good job of figuring out how difficult the client is during the discovery phase, mm-hmm. then that's on you. You are going to absorb that if it's a flat fee. But if the client is asking you for something that's different than what they asked you at the start, then that's a scope change. And then you have a conversation with the client about, hey, we're happy to do this, but let's have a conversation about how it impacts the scope and timeline of the project and what that means for the fees. So I don't know if that's a great answer for you, but this is where those questions we ask at the beginning of the project when we're scoping become super important, because if project difficulty and, you know, how many emails and how much of a pain in the butt is the client going to be, there should be some questions or some tests that we run to figure that out, right?
Yeah.
Like, how much back and forth did it take to schedule this meeting? Do we have a paid discovery process where we get to work with them a little bit and start to suss that out? Those mm-hmm. are some things that we want to think about when we're designing the scoping and estimation process.
Awesome. Yeah, no, that's super helpful. So we'll go back to scoping the project. So what's the first step to take if your estimates are still subjective and risky?
Yeah.
What would you do there?
The first thing that you want to do is, there's two steps to this. The first is standardizing estimation. And there's two things you need to standardize. The first is the methodology. How do you come up with these assumptions? What's the process that you go through? Make sure that that's reasonably well documented, because of course, if that's changing, then it's hard to compare one estimate to another if you came up with it in a different way. And the second is standardize the format. And I don't mean the fonts and colors that you use in the document, but I mean like, what is the schema of the estimate? Are you thinking about it in terms of, well, there's a client, and within that there's a project, and within that there's deliverables, and within each deliverable there's phases, and then within each phase there's tasks, or maybe there's services, or maybe there's roles, right? What is the structure of the estimate? How are you structuring the assumptions? We want to lock that down, because that is going to determine how your time tracking data, your project management data, your accounting data should be set up. Because if those are vastly different, and this is probably true for most of the people listening to this, it's true for 99% of the clients that we work with. We get in there and we're like, okay, your estimate says design hours, dev hours, PM hours, but your time tracking is like all these miscellaneous tasks. How are we going to answer the question of, did we scope this right?
Yeah.
We can't do it. The data is not set up to do that. So it's getting alignment. Standardize the estimate and then go look at your time tracking tool, your project management tools, wherever you're getting feedback on what actually happened, and make sure that it is structurally aligned to the estimate. By the way, shameless plug, this is what we help people do. We have a piece of software that helps normalize all that data. So even if you've been screwing this up for 10 years, we can clean all that data up by creating a set of rules that normalizes all your data to a standard schema that we help you develop through our consulting.
Awesome. And then how can our listeners get in touch with you if they're interested in using your services?
Great question. Well, first of all, if you're under $1 million in revenue, I want to make sure that you can take what I've talked about today and implement it without spending any money, because you can't afford to work with us, but you should still be doing this. And I want to make sure every agency owner is able to start figuring this out early.
Yeah.
So if that's you, head to paraketo.com/toolkit. And I've put together a list of resources, cheat sheets, templates, and training videos to walk you through how to do all of this on your own in spreadsheets without needing to spend a dollar. If you're over $1 million in revenue and you're struggling with this, then head to paraketo.com, schedule a call with us. I'd love to chat about what you have going on and see if we can be helpful.
Love that. And so where do you see Paraketo in 5 years' time?
Ooh, we want to be the ETL layer for professional services. So we want to completely change the way that all professional services companies structure and report and get value out of their data.
Cool. That's so exciting. Well, we are getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but first we have the Fast Five, which are five rapid fire questions. So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
That's a really good question. Probably one of the best books I've ever written. It's a super fun read, is a book called, let me remember. How am I forgetting the name of the book? I think it's right here. The Go-Giver. There it is.
The Go-Giver.
Right back here. The Go-Giver is a great book. Such a good book.
Yeah.
And what I love about it is it's a great story and there's some great insights in there. And I think it's the fundamental mindset that I have towards business, is it's like, let's just create as much value as we can. And then we'll capture a small percentage of it. And as long as we focus on always creating a ton of value, like, we're going to be fine. And that's really the approach we take to everything we do.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone who hasn't read that, it takes you like, 2 hours to read max. It's such a short but sweet book. So yeah, I love that book. And what does your morning routine look like?
My Fitbit wakes me up when it's supposed to, I guess, when I'm the least groggy. I keep my phone, I charge my phone in another room. So I try to avoid looking at it until after I go to the gym.
Smart.
I come home, I have my protein shake, I have a coffee, I check in with my fiance, and then I get after it. Whatever is on my calendar, I jump into that and get started. That's pretty much how it goes.
Awesome. And is there a CEO that you follow or study?
That's a really good question. Obviously, Dan Martell has been an incredible mentor and influence on me. And, I am fascinated by Elon Musk because he's an example of a person that is extremely technical. And in spite of that, has become, the leader of several massive companies. And has just done insane things, like built the biggest solar company on the planet as like a side hustle in his spare time. Like, who does stuff like that?
So, yeah, so cool.
Obviously mixed reviews on, Elon, and a lot of people like or dislike him, but you can't argue that he is a fascinating human being and is doing things that are just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I think he just inspires people to really think outside the box and just challenge themselves because he works so hard and has created so many cool companies.
Absolutely.
What is your favorite online tool?
Favorite online tool? Oh, that's a good question. Probably Miro. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but it's spelled M-I-R-O. It's a virtual whiteboard software and we use it all the time to do just about everything. We use it with clients. We use it internally. It's just such a natural way to collaborate in a remote environment and get sticky notes and ideas out and work with other people. So huge cool. Fan of Miro.
Love that. And then last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
Oh, there is really no destination to business. I used to believe when I was just starting out, like one day we're just going to have like figured all this out. There won't be any more problems in the business. It'll just be running. And I think the deeper into entrepreneurship I get, the more I realize that the problems will never go away. The business will always be broken. The problems are just going to keep getting bigger. And the question is not, what do we need to do? The most important question that we have to constantly answer as entrepreneurs is, it's not an if question, it's a when question. How do we prioritize these things? What fires can we just kind of ignore for right now? And which ones do we have to address? Because there's always going to be 1,000 things that are going to keep us up at night. There's always going to be things that aren't working the best way that they possibly can be. And that has been a really interesting realization and adjustment to make over these years that we've been doing this.
That's a really good point. Yeah. Time management and prioritizing things. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Marcel. It's been really great chatting with you.
Likewise. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast and we'll see you next time.